It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this Thursday, the 23rd day of January, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I, of course, am Bob Kincaid. And every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, this one being no different. Thanks going out to our subscribers for the 23rd day of the month. And that would be Philip in Maryland and our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow and Stacy. Thank you, each and every one. Also, thank you very kindly overnight to our dear friend Yuki, who made it possible for me to say the following. The fundraising goal for today is $490, and that's considerably better than it would have been otherwise. So we got $490 today and a total of $690 to finish the week. And then come Saturday, I'm on the road. And that's been a big part of what today has been. Packing and cleaning and making sure that this little place is as nice and tidy as it was when I moved in here. And then no telling what the weekend weather will be like. I'll either be home on Saturday night or sometime Sunday noonish. Because when I checked the forecast for home, that little snowflake icon was there. I love the little snowflake icon. No, really. I despise it. But nonetheless, heading for home. And come Monday, assuming I can sort out the problems with whatever the problem is with the streaming PC, well, by Jove, we'll be back at it from the fabulous Horn Studios at the located at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Yes, yes. So that's where we stand as of now. Of course, tomorrow evening, Friday on the front porch. This evening, just an ordinary-ish program. Like I said, when you're moving out of a place, it's kind of hard to get everything packed up and put away while you're sort of still living there. So it may be, I don't know, that I may knock off an hour early this evening just so I can get back to putting my world back in bags. Yeah. Sorry. Or not. Just kind of depends on how things go here. So that's the plan at the moment. Of course, in addition to me packing stuff away and doing dishes and mopping floors and all of that, all day long I've had the, or not all day long, but for the better part of the day, I've had the impeachment cover up on, and it never ceases to amaze. Every day that I watch this, I'd like to say I'm astonished, but I'm not, at the perfidy of these Republican senators, and of course the pettifogging of the really, really bad Trump legal team. They run to the microphones at every opportunity, trying to, trying to stem the tide of American sentiment that now wants to hear from witnesses But I wanted to take a moment before we dive into any of the substance of the day and the other news of the day, just to offer a bit of a bit of praise for people who, although Adam Schiff has mentioned them, people who don't often get the recognition that they deserve. As I've watched the presentation thus far, one of the things that has genuinely impressed me is the stunning degree of preparation, preparedness, and professionalism of the presentation by all of the House managers. And there have been words of praise, effusive praise, for the House managers, and in particular, Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler. Hearing the squeals of butthurt complaint from the maggots, in particular about Jerry Nadler, reminds me of, and I'm paraphrasing, this is not a direct quote, but it's very close, that quote from John Donne, I believe it was. Jonathan Swift. I think it was Jonathan Swift, who said, "You will know a great man by these portents, that wherever he goes, he will be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces." A confederacy of dunces. And that's what the shrieking butthurt maggots are. And every time they howl about Nadler or about Schiff, they are in their own way offering their own praise for the effectiveness of the presentation. But moreover, the people I want to praise are the people who are behind the scenes. And in particular, because I have just enough experience with it to know I despise it, I hate video editing. Audio editing, I can deal with that. Video editing, however, is a giant, at least to me, pain in the tuchus. And the people, when you think about the volume of video evidence that there is from all of the testimony and the news clips and the clips of Nitwit Nero standing on the White House lawn, running his filthy, ignorant gob. Well, then you get a sense of just how much work goes in to preparing and then running on cue all of these video clips, all of these slides, and making it run absolutely seamlessly. We do not have names to attach to this degree of stunning competence, breathtaking talent, but suffice to say that there is a great deal of it on display in this sham of a trial. And even so, the other thing, I'm also reminded of a line that is uttered by Atticus in To Kill a Mockingbird, when the question is put to him, "Why do you do this even though you know you're going to lose?" And he answers something along the lines of, sometimes you have to do it, even though you know you're going to get beaten. You have to do it in order to remain true to yourself. And so every one of the house managers and all the people supporting them are to be praised and held up as models of citizenship and dedication to both the country and the Constitution. So I just wanted to make sure that I got that out there for a moment. Because it needs to be mentioned. I don't know. I'm seeing it too. Dave in the Facebook chat asking, what's wrong with headon.live? It's nothing but a white screen. Yeah, some of the graphics seem to have disappeared or something. I don't know. I hope I didn't break it earlier. I don't think I did. But maybe Brother Deacon Asa will want to take a look at that. But nonetheless, the chat room appears to be working. Because early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky and Terry and Saigon are there. And hallelujah glory. White Rose Society is back up and running. I got a note from Ben Birch saying that he had restarted everything. That was good. And of course, if you pop into the chat room picking out a screen name and a password, you will be, like I said, met and greeted by Anatole and Squeaky and Terry and Saigon, and moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space today, and so you will find him in his incarnation as Sparky. By all means, jump on by and join in the fun, or pop over at the Facebook video. However you wish to participate. And a reminder, now that we're sort of into the swing of things, the fundraising goal is $490 for this evening. And we need to get caught up because, well, it's time for me to go home. And, boy, big stack of bills waiting when I get there. Okay. Mike in Cascadia says headon.live is working for him. No issues at all. Good, good, good. Oh, hey, we're started. So we're down to 480. Thank you very kindly to our pal Anatole in the chat room. Thank you very much. Now we're rolling. Billable Rick says, subject line, Adam Schiff. I'd like to move to draft a new Democratic candidate for the U.S. presidency, Adam Schiff. His amazing command of the facts and law in the impeachment removal trial shows that he has an in-depth knowledge of how government is supposed to work. Representative Schiff has also proven that he has the intelligence, ethics, and chops to be president. Do I have a second? Or should we keep Adam Schiff in Congress to keep kicking ass, taking names, and producing receipts? Yeah, I think he's kind of busy right now, Billable. But in the future, it could certainly be 2024. Might be a nice time. He's about my age, I think. And so he'd be, I guess, our second Gen X president, and would be what, 60 something when he ran? 61, 62? But he is obviously a brilliant man. And it shows. Thank you, Randy and PA. The mobile version of headon.live appears to be all right. Good. Mine just didn't load right for some reason or another. Well, It is a thorn in the side Thursday, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Still nothing. Now, I'm sending, and everything looks good. Brother Deacon Asa told me we were hot on both streams. All right. Brother Deacon Asa will have things sorted out if he doesn't already. That was a couple of minutes ago. All right. Good. Everything should be square. Before we go and take in any more of the presentation, since this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, maybe, what do you say we check in with the junior senator from the state of Tennistan? Yes, Tennistan. After January of 2021, this person will be the senior senator from Tennessee, which is a horrifying thought. We're talking, of course, about Marsha Gedneth Blackburn, the woman who's, I guess, her hair dye has gone all the way through to the past the folds of. Well, no, I think if you were to look at her brain, you'd probably find it doesn't have much in the way of folds. It's probably smooth as a bowling ball. But Marsha Blackburn got into it on social media with Jennifer Rubin, the columnist, the conservative columnist from the Washington Post. She is, Marsha Blackburn, actively engaged in violating her oath for the trial. The first day of the Senate proceedings, well, she spent her time with the fine folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda instead of as the rules of the Senate that she voted to pass, mind you, as the rules of the Senate say, she is supposed to sit and listen. Okay? And she didn't. She went over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. She walked out of the proceedings yesterday evening, and today she's been spotted reading a book. Maybe that's the breaking news part of this. The damn fool can actually read. Rubin spoke out on it and said she might improve her understanding of the facts and law if she paid attention. This is shameful. At which point, Marsha. Oh, my nose. Marsha stepped outside the Senate chambers to clap back, or attempt to, poorly, at Jennifer Rubin. She's not supposed to do that, but she's doing it anyway. The senators are only supposed to leave when they formally recess. But of course, no, sorry. They're Republicans, so if they want to go outside and you know, run naked in the halls of the Senate, the horror, they can because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. And she replied to Jennifer Rubin saying, first, I'm reading Resistance at All Costs by Kim Strassel. Read the chapter on obstruction. It provides good insights into today's proceedings. It's worth noting that Kim Strassel is not a lawyer and does not know how these proceedings work. And then she tried to play the mama card. Second, busy mamas are the best at multitasking. Try it. Here's the funny thing about her being a busy mama. She doesn't have any children at home. Both of her kids are, in fact, married and out living on their own.
Yeah.
Goodness. So they're not exactly doing the good faith business of being jurors.
No. No.
And again, jurors are not allowed to walk out of the courtroom and talk to the press. But the Republicans are desperate to do that. And it is, as they say in the gambling world, a tell. Yeah. At least one member of the Republican contingent has agreed that what Donald Trump did, Donald J. Trump, the J stands for genius, Mike Braun. This is kind of interesting, too, because Mike Braun, Brown, B-R-A-U-N, is from Talibandiana. And he was interviewed by, of course, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and a guy over there named Chad Pergram. And he pretty much confessed out Nitwit Nero. Where I'm coming from is that probably the discussion of all of this wasn't appropriate. It's obviously gotten the president into an entanglement. It is just not impeachable. And the sentence is either you're gone, you don't get off, you know, for probation. I think all of this has to boil down to the fact that working in a process where your verdict is binary, this is a death sentence of any elected official, and you better have a case. So in other words, Trump's guilty, but Mike Braun is simply going to engage in some senatorial jury nullification. Don't care. He can do whatever he wants. God knows if he stuck his big orange, well, his little orange toe right in front of my face, says Mike Braun, I would suck it like a creamsicle. How vile it must be to have to go to sleep in one's own head every night when you've spent your day metaphorically filleting Donald Trump. Ugh. Disgusting. But then again, that disgust is for people with morals, people with consciences, people with ethical centers, none of which troubles any Republican in the Senate, or, for that matter, the House. And I don't know, maybe we're working on a new tradition here, as this sham perpetrated by Mitch McConnell and his henchmen and fellow travelers unfurls. Maybe that new tradition is to have a quote a day from precious Lindsey Graham having a plum conniption. Goodness me. Precious Lindsey is just so wrought. There's no amount of mimosas in the world, no matter how much love Agador Spartacus pours into him, that can just take away the anger and the fury and the frustration of precious Lindsey. Agador Spartacus, another mimosa, and grind up a Darvon in it. Yeah, Lindsey is not at all happy about the proceedings. Not at all.
Don't fire this guy, you don't get the $1 billion. I love Joe Biden, but I can tell you, if the name was Trump, there'd be a lot of questions asked. So what I want out of all this, I want the public to understand that the claims they're making, that there's no there in Biden's, nobody's looked, somebody should. And I've looked, and I've got a lot of questions. Were they buying insurance by hiring Hunter Biden? Because they sure as hell wasn't buying expertise.
Can we ask you about the case that you heard?
Yes,
there?
Chuck Schumer, I will.
Chuck Schumer today said, he said, it may have planted the first seed in their minds that perhaps the president did something very wrong here. Was that seed planted in your mind or in any other Republicans' minds?
So let me, let's hear from what the other side says. Did they selectively take testimony of witnesses to tell a story, which I thought was well told? Will it stand up? So they got caught. That's why they released the funds. The problem with cases like this is all of us are involved in this issue. So when they froze funds to the Ukraine, I was
Lindsay, there, you can drop your article. You don't call it the Ukraine anymore. They called it the Ukraine when it was a captive part of Mother Russia. Now, I understand you have some loyalties to Mother Russia, but no matter how desperately you wish it, Ukraine is a free and independent nation trying to stand on its own hind legs, despite the best or worst, depending on how you go about looking at it now, efforts of both the lovable, huggable, snuggable, cuddleable Pootie Poot and his little orange thang, Donald Trumpinski. And, of course, you yourself there, Lindsay, because nobody will ever ask you the question on the straight up. But the fact of the matter is there's some rubles in your bank account, sugar, that came to you through the efforts of the National Ruble Association. Yes, it is. So it's not the Ukraine because they're a free country now. Granted, I'm sure you would love to see them ground back under the heel of that nasty old KGB spook Pootie, but not at the moment. Learn your geopolitics there, Lindsay.
Convinced by people at the Department of Defense that one of the reasons we want to take a time out is we've got a newly elected president we don't know anything about. I was told that by DOD. Now, as you fast forward, they're making the argument that Donald Trump's temporary freeze of funds called the Ukrainian army to collapse and people die. Nothing could be further from the truth. They got more aid from the Trump administration, the Obama administration, and when you look at what people...
Yeah, but they withheld that aid until they got caught, Lindsay. That's the problem. And yes, people did die while the funds were being held up. So you can holler that there ain't no dead people, but there are. And the graves can be found. And people have found the graves and told the story, you see.
People were saying on the ground they had capability they never had before. So on September the 10th or the 11th, I called the White House and said, I'm okay with this guy. I'm going to vote with Durbin at the Appropriations Committee to make sure the aid flows for the rest of 2019. Rob Portman called the same day. It's pretty clear to me that when Rob called and I called and I was going to join forces with Durbin, they were going to lose a vote. Now, that's a theory of why the aid was released that I know about that you didn't hear. So the point is, let's see what the other side says. Then we'll make our decision about what the president actually did or didn't do.
Now, see, there's this motion you can make when you go to trial, and it's called a motion to sequester. And when granted, the court orders that the witnesses are not to be in the courtroom and are not to be sitting there discussing their testimony together, you know, getting their story straight. Well, all the rules are out the window here. So now, again, this is a recording from an interview done on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. And this is Lindsey Graham, whose devotion to this country is now significantly in question. This is Lindsey Graham telegraphing to the single most important viewer of Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and his staff what to claim when it comes time for them to present whatever it is that will pass for a defense. He wants them to say that the money was released not because Trump got caught, but because of some backroom shenanigans in the Senate of the United States. He is literally putting their defense together for them and, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, giving them the claim.
Ask me about why I laughed, you know, when the president saw the video. If he thought he was doing something wrong, he would probably shut up about it. In October, he's saying somebody needs to be looking at the Bidens. He told me that yesterday. The president believes that what happened in the Ukraine with the Bidens was inappropriate.
Yeah, here's the thing. Nothing happened in the Ukraine. Again, Lindsay, separate nation. If he was to try to tell a Ukrainian person that there's no difference between a Ukrainian and a Russian, the said Ukrainian would probably stomp a mud hole in Lindsay's little hobbit ass. But nonetheless, that phrase, what happened with the Bidens and Ukraine, is a non-thing. It is, for those of you familiar with your South Park, the Chewbacca defense. Chewbacca's an 8-foot-tall Wookiee. Why would he want to live on Endor with a bunch of little 2.5-foot-tall Ewoks? It don't make sense. Why am I talking about Chewbacca? It don't make sense. You have now officially heard the South Park version of Johnny Cochran's Chewbacca defense rendered into goob speak by Lindsey Graham. Yeah, the Bidens in Ukraine, it don't make sense. It's because it doesn't exist. The kind of log rolling that got Hunter Biden his job with Burisma is the kind of log rolling that takes place every day in corporate America and corporate Earth. And that's just fact. Over an email, Matt in San Francisco says, how many dolts does it take to destroy a democracy? 53, apparently. How so many people with no shame can end up in charge of the fate of this fledgling democratic republic is beyond me. The election of 2020 will be very telling. I hope it will tell us that we will collectively kick out enough of these dolts to get back to doing the honest business of the people. My fear is it will tell me, collectively, we would rather continue to be ruled by people with no moral core. A group of people who can lie as easily as the rest of us say good morning. I, for one, am traveling to a foreign country in March just to see if it's worth continuing to dance on the soil where I was born. Or would I be wiser to live out my golden years where my gold will last longer and won't continue to be spent on corrupt schemes and illegal military actions? Thanks for the Darvon reference. I haven't heard that term in quite a few years. Always happy to oblige, Matt. And thanks for... We're going to... For good or ill, by this time next year, we will have learned a lot about our country and our countrymen, and we will have learned more than we knew in 2016, late 2016. And there's good reason to fear that we will continue to prove to be not the country we thought we were. there is great cause for concern, considerable cause for alarm. Lady B chiming in to say the video editing is perfect. The men and women working on the AV portion of the trial are pros, and it shows. Everything from the technical director to the person who keys up the next slide is on point. If they don't already work in the private sector, then they certainly will have a good shot at it. Using PowerPoint presentations, video and audio sound bites is a brilliant idea and completely apropos for the 21st century. It breaks up the monotony in what could be a very dry and technical presentation. If the rubes aren't being swayed even a little bit, fuck 'em. We need to appeal to those with common sense and a sense of decency. The Senate may not vote for removal, but can't nobody say the House didn't try. Hear, hear. Ron and Raleigh, expertise. So Hunter Biden has no expertise. Tell me how many people sitting on boards have direct knowledge of the inner workings of the companies whose boards they sit on. I want someone to tell me what expertise Jared Kushner has in negotiating a peace treaty. What expertise does that shoe salesperson have in international finance, which allows her to be galumphing around Davos on the public dole? I'm asking for a friend. Yeah, and however many dollars it was that Hunter Biden was paid by Burisma pales by comparison to the amount of money that precious I wank my daddy Trump, Kushner, has made off of corrupt deals on her family name. Somehow or another, though, we don't manage to ask that question so good. Yeah. I wonder why that is. Every time somebody brings up Hunter Biden, why doesn't somebody look at precious Lindsay and say, what about all the self-dealing by Princess Iwankamadaddy Trump? Any ideas there, precious Lindsay? Yeah, I know. The Chewbacca defense, asks Scott in San Diego. Wait, are you telling us that Trump and the GOP Senate are suffering with terminal hairballs? That explains all the grumpiness. I can't. Ferg does the Chewbacca noise awesomely. Me, not so much. The junior senator from Indiana's name is pronounced, according to Dave from the Blind, Brown. Just like Adolf Hitler's wife, Eva. Which reminds me, I should ask his office if his dad was part of the wedding party. Wait a minute. Yeah, nicely played, Dave. Nicely played indeed. Yeah, and of course, and then Tracy chiming in a few minutes ago about Marcia allegedly reading a book. Shouldn't old girl have done her homework before class? I know. It'd be nice if somebody'd make her wear it. You know, in sixth grade, if we got caught chewing gum, we had to wear it for the rest of the day on the end of our noses. I think that'd be a great look for Marcia. Meanwhile, Kyle, in a state of wonder, holy fuck, maggots can read? Jesus, Bob, next time warn me before making such a shocking announcement so I don't fall off the couch and scare the shit out of my poor dog. Oh, I'm sorry, Kyle. But I know, it's a little... Yeah. Mm-hmm. And let's... Oh, hey, good news. Thanks to Thomas over at FYINation.com. Fundraising is now down to $455. $455. Thank you very kindly, Thomas. That's a tremendous help. As to the qualifications of members of boards of directors, Steve in New York says directors without qualifications. How rare. And directs our attention to Catherine A. Tasia, aged 56, independent director for Verizon Communications Incorporated. Catherine A. Tasia is on the board of Verizon Communications, Inc., Selco Partnership, Inc., and Woolworths Group Limited. In the past, she held the position of Chief Merchandising and Supply Chain Officer of EVP at Executive Vice President at Target Corp. Ms. Tasia received an undergraduate degree from the University of Wisconsin, so her experience is working at Target. Nothing wrong with such experience, but I have a feeling it has nothing to do with telecommunications. Yeah, it has to do with who you know. Of course. That's what all of this is about. It's who you know and how much dough. Hunter Biden? A gas company in Ukraine? It's the Chewbacca defense. It's a giant nothing burger. But nonetheless, there's precious Lindsay over there standing in front of whatever microphone he can get closest to, hooting about it. But I've got a solution to the Hunter Biden problem. And you notice they keep saying the Bidens. Because Joe, of course, at the behest of his boss, Barack Obama, and also at the behest of the European of European governments and European economic councils and whatnot, had a dirty prosecutor fired in Ukraine. And they went and Adam Schiff went through this at great length earlier today, explaining what about the prosecutor was dirty, how the dirty worked. But regardless of all of that, I got a solution to this. And it will shut Lindsay up. And most of the other maggots, too. You know, make America gag again, Trump senators, maggots. And simple. But only Joe Biden can do this. So the chances of it happening are pretty damn slim. Joe Biden needs to find the first microphone he can get to. It's somewhere out in Iowa, or maybe New Hampshire. And he needs to look into it in that grandfatherly way that he has, in just full sincerity, and say, "Why, I was in the Senate for decades. I know the Senate. I love the Senate. The Senate is an institution dear to my heart. I have a deep and abiding understanding of the procedures involved with the trial of impeachment in the Senate. And for that reason, I'm announcing here today that I will be happy to be sworn in and testify in the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump on one condition. Donald J. Trump is sworn and testifies first. Ball's in your court, little orange man. Got any guts? Well, do you, punk? And all the Hunter Biden stuff and all the Joe Biden stuff would disappear into thin, thin air. Well, you know, a guy can dream, can't he? Because it would be nice to see that kind of pushback. And the Republicans couldn't claim any collusion. And you know what you're left with then? The next talking point on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda will be, how dare Joe Biden say something like that? Goodness me, mercy sakes alive. Doesn't he know nothing about the Fifth Amendment? Donald Trump is on trial. He has a Fifth Amendment right not to have to testify. And then, of course, there'd be a million clips from a million different Law and Order Republicans saying, why is so-and-so taking the Fifth Amendment? It certainly makes juries think you must be guilty when you won't testify in your own behalf. I bet we could find lots of clips from the OJ trial of people talking like that about taking the Fifth Amendment. The right against self-incrimination. Upon advice of counsel, I refused to answer that question on the grounds that it might tend to incriminate me and subject me to criminal liability. Wouldn't you just love to hear Donald Trump say that? Well, I mean, to be fair, he couldn't say any of that. Upon advice of Corn Silk, I refuse to answer that question on the goons that it might tend to inseminate me. It'd probably be something more like that. Because after all, he is a brain-damaged idiot. Whether the brain damage was caused by spirochetes remains to be seen. Back to Lindsay for a moment.
Now, whether or not that will withstand scrutiny, I don't know. The president believes that the Ukraine interfered in our election. I can tell you without any doubt, it was the Russian.
Wait, scrutiny? No. The scrutiny took place back before he paid the money to the two porn stars. He scrutinized them for a long time, I think. Well, short time, I guess, depending on how you want to talk about it.
Who hacked into the DNC? It was not the Ukrainians. I cannot say that there was nobody in the Ukraine that had worked with Manafort that did a number on him. I don't.
Yeah, no. Oh, that hacked into the DNC. I love it. Because, see, I refuse to forget this. I refuse to let this disappear. Because every time I hear somebody like Precious Lindsay complaining and pissing and moaning about, Russia hacked into the DNC. It's funny how they never say, oh, and they hacked into the RNC server too, but they only released the DNC stuff. Because see, that's the other thing that brings every word that comes out of Precious Lindsay's mouth into question. And that is, what does Vlad have on Lindsay? Because again, and you can find the news stories for yourself, I believe the dateline on one was 2017, Russians hacked RNC server 2. And if they did a good, if they got into the DNC, the odds are about 99-1 that they got into the RNC too. But the RNC server materials have a much different value. The value relative to the DNC server was to immediately release it all and use it to impact the 2016 presidential election and the presidential aspirations of Hillary Clinton. The mere mention of it, because Vlad Putin is scared shitless of Hillary Clinton. Because, well, she doesn't put up with his bullshit and would not have as president. And Barack Obama did not put up with his bullshit. Barack Obama's a hell of a lot taller than him and just looked straight down at him. Hello, little man. But the value of the RNC server was the compromise that it provided on all manner of Republicans. But nobody ever asks those questions. Lindsay, we know the Russians have the RNC server too. What kind of stuff did they get on you? Huh? What have they got, Lindsay? Tracy with a note. Precious Lindsay and Mike's. Maybe the reason why Precious Lindsay loves getting in front of Mike so much is because that's the closest he can get to fillet the orange menace in public. Well, let's see. That's pretty much done. Dinner is now done in the Eastern and Central time zones. That one's on you, Tracy. Subject line, Miss Lindsay in the military. No one ever asks about his military service. Check this out. Can you say stolen valor? From a New York Times article by the editorial board of the New York Times, dated August 4th, 2015. Lindsey Graham's curious military career. By all accounts, including his own, Senator Lindsey Graham was a good military lawyer during the 6.5 years he spent on active duty in the Air Force before he entered politics. Since leaving active duty in 1989 and joining the Air Force Reserve, Mr. Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, who's running for president, that didn't last long, appears to have performed very little substantive work in the Air Force, yet he rose to the rank of colonel and remained in the service until his retirement in June, which entitles him to a monthly $2,773 pension. Writing for the Washington Post, Craig Whitlock showed that although Lindsay did very little in the reserves, it was a mutually beneficial arrangement, able to keep the honor of the uniform intertwined with his political life, and the Air Force got to keep a lawmaker in its ranks who had stature and sway on Capitol Hill. And goes on to add that he has made up unvarnished bullshit about his service in the Air Force Reserve, among other things, claiming that he served as a reserve officer in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, it turns out that no, those were specially arranged where he would only be there for a couple of days, and they called it military service even though he had traveled with a congressional delegation. Then there was the claim that he was the senior instructor at the Judge Advocate General School at Maxwell Air Force Base here in Alabama. There's only one problem. Even though that's in the official biography, Lindsay said, "I never took time to change it. I probably should have. I never set foot in Alabama or on that Air Force Base. Mercy." But then there was the time he claimed to be a veteran of the Persian Gulf War, but he was never deployed. And between 1995 and 2005, he put in a total of 108 hours of training. That's about a day and a half, actually less than a day and a half per year. Man, that's W. Bush defending the Rio Grande from the hordes of Viet Cong by working on the Winton Blunt senatorial campaign in Alabama level of bullshit. So thank you for that, Ron. Further proof that Lindsey is the big old fraud that we have always thought he was. Let's see. This might be worth our time. Let's see who's talking in the proceedings.
Must be held accountable.
Hakeem Jeffries.
The president's defenders may argue, as Mick Mulvaney tried to do, that quid pro quo arrangements are a common aspect of U.S. foreign policy nonsense. There are situations where official United States acts, like head of state meetings or the provision of foreign assistance, are used to advance the national interests of the United States. That is not what happened here. Here, President Trump sought to advance his own personal political interests facilitated by Rudolph Giuliani, the human hand grenade. Let's walk through the overwhelming evidence of how President Trump withheld an official White House meeting that was vitally important to Ukraine as part of a corrupt scheme to convince President Zelensky to announce two phony political investigations. First, the Oval Office meeting President Trump corruptly withheld constitutes an official act. President Trump chose to withhold this meeting for a reason. It was not some run-of-the-mill meeting. It was one of the most powerful tools he could wield in his role as a leader of the free world. It would have demonstrated U.S. support for Ukraine's newly elected leader at a critical time. Ukraine is under relentless attack by Russian-backed separatists in Crimea and in the East. Ukraine desperately needed an Oval Office meeting, and President Trump knew it. Second, President Trump withheld that Oval Office meeting to increase pressure on Ukraine to assist his re-election campaign by announcing two phony investigations. As my colleagues have detailed extensively throughout the day, this is a classic quid pro quo. Third, multiple administration officials, including the president's own handpicked supporters and appointees, confirmed that a corrupt exchange was being sought. Finally, contemporaneous documentation makes clear that the president corruptly abused his power to advance this scheme, to try and cheat in the 2020 election. This for that. Let's explore whether the granting or denial of an official Oval Office meeting constitutes an official act. As we discussed earlier today, an abuse of power occurs when the president exercises his official power to obtain a corrupt personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. Pursuant to the Constitution and more than 200 years of tradition, as president, Donald Trump is America's head of state and chief diplomat. Article 2 grants the president wide latitude to conduct diplomacy and specifically receive ambassadors and other public ministers. The president decides which head of state meetings best advance the national interest and which foreign leaders are deserving of an official reception in the Oval Office. Perhaps one of the most prestigious non-religious venues in the world. In diplomacy, perception matters. Meetings between heads of state are make or break moments that can determine the trajectory of global events. And a meeting with the President of the United States in the Oval Office is unquestionably monumental, particularly for a fragile democracy like Ukraine. The Oval Office is where foreign leaders facing challenges at home, like a war with Russia, go in pursuit of a strong and public demonstration of American support. That is especially true in this particular case. The decision to grant or withhold an Oval Office meeting to President Zelensky had profound consequences for the national security interests of both Ukraine and the United States. To understand the full context of President Trump's corrupt demands to the Ukrainian leader, it's important to consider the geopolitical context that all of you are very familiar with confronting the American, the Ukrainian people. Ukraine is at war with Russia. In 2014, Russia annexed Crimea by force. The United States and other European countries rallied to Ukraine's defense, providing economic assistance, diplomatic support, and later, with strong advocacy from this body, lethal aid. This support meant Russia faced consequences for its aggression. Here is Ambassador Yovanovitch's testimony explaining just how important the United States is to Ukraine.
The U.S. Relationship for Ukraine is the single most important relationship. And so I think that President Zelensky, any president, would do what they could to lean in on a favor request. I'm not saying that that's a yes. I'm saying they would try to lean in and see what they could do.
Fair to say that a president of Ukraine that is so dependent on the United States would do just about anything within his power to please the president of the United States, if he could?
If he could. I mean, I'm sure there are limits, and I understand there were a lot of discussions in the Ukrainian government about all of this. We are an important relationship on the security side and on the political side. And so the president of Ukraine, one of the most important functions that individual has is to make sure the relationship with the U.S. is rock solid.
But it isn't just the relationship itself. It was a public meeting in the White House that would show U.S. support for Ukraine. A meeting with the President of the United States in the Oval Office is one of the most forceful diplomatic signals of support that the United States can send. Veteran diplomat George Kent testified to this.
New leaders, particularly countries that are trying to have good footing in the international arena, see a meeting with the U.S. President in the Oval Office at the White House as the ultimate sign of endorsement and support from the United States.
President Zelensky was a newly elected leader. He was swept into office on a pledge to end pervasive corruption. He also had a mandate to negotiate an end to the war with Russia. To achieve both goals, he needed strong U.S. support, particularly from President Trump, which Zelensky sought in the form of a White House meeting. David Holmes, political counselor to the embassy in Kyiv, described the particular importance of a White House visit to Ukraine in the context of its war with Russia.
It is important to understand that a White House visit was critical to President Zelensky. President Zelensky needed to show U.S. support at the highest levels in order to demonstrate to Russian President Putin that he had U.S. backing, as well as to advance his ambitious anti-corruption reform agenda at home.
In other words, Ukraine knew that Russia was watching carefully. That was particularly true in the spring of 2019, when Donald Trump launched the scheme at the center of the abuse of power charge. During this time period, Vladimir Putin was preparing for peace negotiations with the new Ukrainian leader. Putin could choose to escalate, or he could choose to de-escalate Russian aggression. And influencing his decision was an assessment of whether President Trump had Ukraine's back.
The Russians, as I said at my deposition, would love to see the humiliation of President Zelensky at the hands of the Americans.
An Oval Office meeting would have sent a strong signal of support that President Trump had Ukraine's back. The absence of such a meeting could be devastating. Indeed, Ukraine made very clear to the United States just how important a White House meeting between the two heads of state was for its fragile democracy. At the deposition, as the one on the screen reveals, of Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the director for Ukraine on the National Security Council, he recalled that following President Zelensky's inauguration, at every single meeting with Ukrainian officials, they asked their American counterparts about the status of an Oval Office meeting between the two presidents. Initially, the Ukrainians had reason to be optimistic that a White House meeting would be promptly scheduled. On April 21st, during President Zelensky's first call with President Trump, the new Ukrainian leader asked about a White House visit three times. As part of that brief congratulatory call, President Trump himself did extend an invitation. Ukraine's dependence on the United States and its desperate need for a White House meeting created an unequal power dynamic between the two presidents. As Lieutenant Colonel Vindman testified, it is that unequal power dynamic that turned any subsequent request for a favor from the president into a demand.
Now, Colonel, you've described this as a demand, this favor that the president asked. What is it about the relationship between the president of the United States and the president of Ukraine that leads you to conclude that when the president of the United States asks a favor like this, it's really a demand?
Chairman, the culture I come from, the military culture, when a senior asks you to do something, even if it's polite and pleasant, it's not to be taken as a request. It's to be taken as an order. In this case, the power disparity between the two leaders, my impression is that in order to get the White House meeting, President Zelensky would have to deliver these investigations.
And you know what? Let me just interject something for a moment about what Lieutenant Colonel Vindman said there. He's right, and history bears him out. For instance, for students of the Civil War, one of the things that the traitor Robert E. Lee missed when the traitor Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson was murdered by his own troops was that when Lee would say, "General, I think it would be a fine thing if you would take some of your foot cavalry and go and slaughter some of the people who are defending the Constitution against which we are engaged in treason." Of course, Lee never spoke like that because, well, traitors seldom do. And but Lee, having said, "I think it would be a fine idea if," well, Jackson understood that what that meant was for him to get busy, get his troops moving, and go and murder some of the people who were defending the Constitution of the United States against the treason being perpetrated by people like Thomas Jackson and Robert E. Lee. And after Jackson was killed, one of the things that he missed most was when he would say something like that to an incompetent like General George Pickett, who was famous for spending his time every morning oiling his curly locks. No shit, really. Because he was incompetent, Pickett would say, "Oh, I didn't know that he meant for me to do that." So Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was being a competent officer and not treasonous, knows what an order is when he hears one. And in that vein, well, we have another sighting, if you will, of Marsha Goodness Blackburn. She's doubled down on her awfulness. And in fact, left the proceedings in order to tweet. And old Balls and Strikes Roberts will not do a damn thing to enforce the rules under which the tribunal is presently operating. It was after earlier clips of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's testimony were played that Marsha left the chambers and tweeted the following. Alexander Vindman broke the chain of command and leaked the contents of the president's July 25th phone call to his pal, the whistleblower, over a policy dispute with the president. For those watching the video, the fist there is to indicate the exclamation point that Marsha used. Shame on you, people of Tennessee. Shame on you. Putting an idiot like that in the Senate of the United States. Shame on you, volunteer state, proud of your heritage of running to the military rescue, that you would put into office a woman who would slime an oath-sworn officer of the United States Army. Shame on you. She sleazed Lieutenant Colonel Vindman for having the guts, for having the integrity to alert people in conjunction with his oath, not to a fucking orange president, but to the Constitution of the United States, of a vast and continuing violation of that Constitution of the United States. Will anybody call Marsha Vindman or Marsha Blackburn to account for her assault on the reputation and dignity of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman? I'm so old I can remember a Republican Party insisted that everybody in America have a little yellow magnetic ribbon made by some 9-year-old girl chained to a table in Guangdong Province, China, affixed to their vehicle while we were illegally slaughtering 1 million innocent civilians in Iraq. I remember Republicans who ran to the defense of officers who officers and enlisted men who violated their oaths to the Constitution and committed war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. But a man who simply honors his oath and tells the truth, Marsha Blackburn, attacks that man. And just a reminder, as we move into the second hour of the program, we are at $455 in fundraising. And if we can knock off $55, that'll mean that we will have taken care of everything but Wednesday and Thursday of this week. So leaving us only $600 to finish the week tomorrow. So I guess that would be job one, is knocking down that other $55. Back to Congressman Jeffries.
About a meeting. And so as we get through the main discussion, we're going into that wrap-up phase. The Ukrainians, Mr. Danilyuk, starts to ask about a White House meeting. And Ambassador Bolton was trying to parry this back.
As you've seen, President Zelensky didn't just raise the Oval Office meeting on his April 21st call. He raised the meeting on July 21st, fifth call with President Trump again. President Zelensky said on the July 25th call, I also wanted to thank you for your invitation to visit the United States, specifically Washington, D.C. After the July 25th call, the Ukrainians continued to press for the meeting, but that meeting never happened. Only on September 25th, after the House announced its investigation into the president's misconduct as it relates to Ukraine, and the existence of a whistleblower complaint became public, did President Trump and President Zelensky meet face to face for the first time. That meeting was on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York. It was dominated by public release of the July 25th call record that had occurred the day before. It was a far cry from the strong demonstration of support that would have been achieved by an Oval Office meeting. Even President Zelensky recognized that a face-to-face talk on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly was not the same as an official Oval Office meeting. Sitting next to President Trump in New York, he again raised a White House meeting. Here is what President Zelensky said.
And I want to thank you for the invitation to Washington. Yeah. You invited me. But I think, I'm sorry, but I think you forgot to tell me the date. But I think in the near future.
President Trump was not just withholding a small thing. The Oval Office meeting was a big deal. Ukraine remains at war with Russia. It desperately needs our support. And as a result, the pressure on Ukraine not to upset President Trump, who still refuses to meet with President Zelensky in the Oval Office to this day, continues. David Holmes testified that the Ukrainian government wants an Oval Office meeting even after the release of the security assistance, and that our own United States national security objectives would also benefit from such a meeting.
Although the hold on the security assistance may have been lifted, there were still things they wanted that they weren't getting, including a meeting with the president in the Oval Office. Whether the hold, the security assistance hold continued or not, the Ukrainians understood that that's something the president wanted, and they still wanted important things from the president. So and I think that continues to this day. I think they're being very careful. They still need us now going forward. In fact, right now, President Zelensky is trying to arrange a summit meeting with President Putin in the coming weeks, to his first face-to-face meeting with him to try to advance the peace process. He needs our support. He needs President Putin to understand that America supports Zelensky at the highest levels. So this doesn't end with the lifting of the security assistance hold. Ukraine still needs us, and as I said, still fighting this war this very day.
Now, let's evaluate how exactly President Trump made clear to Ukraine that a White House meeting was conditioned on Ukraine announcing two phony political investigations that would help with President Trump's re-election in 2020, help him cheat and corrupt our democracy. By the end of May, it was clear that President Trump's pressure campaign to solicit foreign election interference wasn't working. President Zelensky had been elected and was rebuffing Mr. Giuliani's overtures. Even when President Trump directed his official staff to work with Mr. Giuliani in an effort to get President Zelensky to announce the two phony political investigations, that didn't work. So President Trump apparently realized that he had to increase the pressure. That's when he explicitly made clear to Ukraine that it would not get the desperately sought after Oval Office meeting unless President Zelensky publicly announced the phony investigations that President Trump sought. On July 2nd, 2019.
This continues to absolutely fascinate me, but it doesn't make for very good video because I don't have the ability to pump the video of this into the Facebook feed. And it is worth mentioning because the world continues to rotate and revolve regardless of anything happening inside the Senate of the United States. And there are things that bear mention. The United States now is without three firefighters. Three crew members of a tanker plane that we sent to help battle the brush fires in Australia are dead. Their C-130 tanker plane crashed into a hillside in the snowy mountains of New South Wales at about 1:30 p.m. Australia time, 2:30 in the morning Greenwich Mean Time. They don't know why the plane. They're not for certain why the plane crashed. But the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons had remarked earlier that high winds were making it extremely difficult to fly the tanker planes. And that brings the death toll from Australia's bushfires to 32 since the crisis began this past September. The U.S. firefighters were employed by a Canadian outfit called Coulson Aviation. The Australians contracted with Coulson to help fight the fires. And just in the last 24 hours, 70 planes have been used to try to contain the hell that is emerging in Australia. And as if that wasn't bad enough, warnings have apparently been issued to people to be particularly vigilant about, and Australia just has, you know, there's amazing life forms and then truly terrifying ones. And apparently little creatures called funnel web spiders are on the move. And relative to human beings, they are among the deadliest spiders on Earth. And because of the heat, the increase in heat, it makes them, I don't know, can you use the word frisky to describe a spider? Because the funnel web spiders are getting friskier, and you don't want to get bitten by one of those. Yeah, full body shiver, sorry. Funnel web spider. Yeah, my cousin Crocodile Kincaid told me you don't want anything to do with one of those. And of course, it is to be expected. The fires get worse because the climate emergency is getting worse. And yet, just the same, Steve Mnuchin, the treasurer, Secretary of the Treasury of the United States of America, decided to take some of his time while he was swanning around Davos to slime who? Yes. Greta Thunberg. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, he did. Because he's a dirtbag. in response to Greta Thunberg's call for not net zero, but real zero carbon economy, Mnuchin said, "Little girl, get back to me after you've gotten your degree in economics and college." AOC immediately jumped to Ms. Thunberg's defense, saying, "That's how it is with the oppressors. If you don't have a college degree, they'll tell you, don't talk until you've got a college degree. On the other hand, if you're like me and you've got a college degree in economics, they'll say it's invalid." Well, looks like it's break time in the old Senate chambers. Hakeem Jeffries got done, and Moscow Mitch McConnell jumped to his feet so that he could give senators a chance to his senators a chance to run to the microphone and further violate the rules of the Senate. They will be in recess for the next 30 minutes. So maybe, if you'd like, that would be a good time to get some conversation in. I'm already in trouble with Brother Deacon Asa for my earlier comment about one of the maggots sucking on Trump's orange toe like a creamsicle. "Well, goddamn," says Brother Deacon Asa, "I was thinking about an early dinner tonight. Thanks a lot, Bob." And then reminding us in of course, the Trump voice, "I like firefighters that didn't die in the line of duty." Yes, correct. In regard to Steve Dirtbag Mnuchin, Steve Swamp Plug Mnuchin, Brother Deacon Asa notes, "Let me get this straight. The guy who spent $800,000 on 3 plane rides is schooling others about economics?" Yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy. Darlene in Connecticut noting, yeah, Lord Mitch likes those breaks. I think in large measure he doesn't have the stamina. Stroke, 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 stroke. I was talking with someone last night, and I said, you know, wouldn't it be delightful to see him just right smack dab in the middle of the proceedings? But then I considered the viciousness of my remark, and I took it back. I took it back. Because, and what I said is, I wouldn't want to see that happen to Mitch McConnell. Yeah, in fact, I would. I adopt the, what I call the Princess Bride standard. To the death. No. To the pain. To the pain. Yeah. And apparently the interweb tubes have not taken well to Marsha Gedneth Blackburn sliming Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. Among other things, she also tweeted, "Adam Schiff is hailing Alexander Vindman as an American patriot. How patriotic is it to badmouth and ridicule our great nation in front of Russia, America's greatest enemy?" Huh? And she has been she's had the living fuck ratioed out of her. And people are eating her alive on social media, among other things noted, noting that she needs to be removed from office. Well, let's take a minute here and go and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, how you doing?
You know, it's Thursday. I'm trying to pack up, get out of here. It's a little stressful.
Right. That's right. One more day in paradise and move back to good old West Virginia.
Yep.
Good old. I was thinking about you today.
Almost level. West by Cold Trump, Virginia.
Yeah, I was listening to, what was I listening to? Democracy Now or something. And they had Tim Robbins on talking about his movie, Dark Waters. And I didn't realize that it took place in West Virginia. And I'm like, hey, that's Bob Kincaid country.
I'm not familiar with this film.
It's about the DuPont and
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, it took me a minute.
Yeah, hey.
It's basically the same story as the documentary. Not Aaron Brockovich. The documentary that Mike Papantonio was involved with. Called the Devil You Know.
You might recall I
interviewed him on the program about the release of that film.
Oh really? Oh okay.
Mm-hmm.
They had Tim Robbins and the actual lawyer who the film was based on this morning. You know, it was pretty interesting. I mean, because what they were talking about how this stuff wasn't just, you know, even though it was released in the water in West Virginia, it's not taking into account, you know, the stuff that was released in the air from the smokestacks.
Right.
And that, you know, all over the country and then basically all over the world, you know, and the fact that they knew what they were doing and just didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, just capitalism.
It's just hillbillies anyway. It's not like they're real Americans or anything.
Anyway. It's like that. It's not like they don't. It's not like they matter.
Right.
There's
corporate profits and losses at stake here. You wouldn't want to let something like caring about human beings get in the way of that. Now wait, what's this about you wanting to know if General Pickett wore a curl cap to bed? You're a bad woman. You're a bad woman. You know that?
Well, when you're talking about the man with, you know, oiling his locks, you know, I immediately went to Jerry Curl Juice. And, I mean, that's why I was thinking the OG curl cap.
No, he was a Southern general. So I'm betting he was, and they didn't have a whole lot. And I'm betting he was oiling his locks with bacon grease.
Well, that's even better, more of a reason to have a curl cap, man, because that's going to leave a stain on the pillowcase like nothing. What? What?
Nothing. I'm trying to stay out of trouble, that's all.
Well, I mean, I know, okay, look, I had a Jerry Curl back in the day, and one day I'm going to find pictures of Tracy Porter with the Jerry Curl. Not only with the Jerry Curl, but the Jerry Curl and braces. Mm. Oh, yeah. Jerry Curl braces and acne. Yeah.
Oh, the trifecta.
Oh. You talk about a full body shiver. You know? So, yeah. So you did not go to bed without your Jerry, without your curl cap on, man, because, you know.
Because that's just nasty.
It's just nasty. Many a pillowcase and pillow was ruined. Not ruined, but ruined.
Run.
Over going to bed without your curl cap on, you know, because it was just. And even though, you know, now. There were times that even though you did go to bed with the curl cap on, there was no guarantee that the curl cap would stay on your head. That part too, because basically the curl cap was just like the cap.
Well, I mean, I guess they just kind of slide off, wouldn't they?
Yeah, because of the Jerry juice. J- Jericho Jews. You know, I mean, anybody that saw, you know, coming to America knows, you know, Soul Glow, you know, come on. And Afro Sheen, well, Afro Sheen was nowhere near as oily as, you know, Jericho Juice or, God, what is Cream of Nature Curl? I mean, there was so many things. And then, you know, the stuff that was locally invented called Good Fred Oil that actually turned your hair red or some close to orange. It was terrible. I'm surprised that people didn't sue. Oh, my God. I mean, the things that black people have done to you know, in order to assimilate.
Well, it reminds me of the story that Lady B sent me last week while I was away from the mic.
About the alopecia?
Yeah, and Representative Ayanna Pressley. I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, it is damnable. It's just what we, especially black women, it is psychologically, you know, what we go through is traumatic about our hair, because you can't, I mean, I have not, there's times that I didn't leave the house because of my hair. And not knowing what to do with it because my hair was falling out, or, you know, I'm going bald. It's you just can't even imagine, you know. And, you know, spending the money that we would have, you know, I used to have to spend on my hair in order to become, you know, quote unquote, where white folks deemed presentable. You know, thousands of dollars on weaves and perms and all this, and all to damage, and, you know, all in the end of damaging my hair. And like I said, finally, at least in California, we have, you know, basically the Natural Hair Act, that you cannot be discriminated in, you know, when it comes to a job if you choose to wear your hair naturally. And you know what? Because I was briefly in the Army Reserves, but I hurt myself, so I had a general medical discharge or whatever, because I was during basic training. So I didn't, you know, serve, you know, I didn't complete basic. But when I was in this, you know, when I enlisted, black women could not wear our hair in braids. So we had to walk around looking like, you know, basically field slaves by the head, really. Or, you know, especially during basic, look, you're not going to have a full-on weave trying to, you know, do, you know, run around, you know, doing calisthenics and all that shit during basic training. Well, I think it was last year when last year was the largest class of African-American women that graduated from West Point.
Yeah, I remember the photo.
You know, I wasn't that excited about that, but what made my heart sore? How many of those women have their hair in braids and locks? So
because now, it was allowed.
It is allowed, because it wasn't allowed in the 80s. That's for damn sure. So that, to see those women, those beautiful, amazing black women, serving this, you know, getting ready to serve this country and being able to wear their hair the way they want to wear their hair in its natural state, or in braids, in a way that will, you know, so that will not hinder their service, that will, they could do, you know, what they need to do without having to worry about, you know, how they look, how their hair, you know, how they are perceived by their, you know, because, you know, one of my favorite songs is, you know, I Am Not My Hair by India Irie, which she wrote in a response to that fuck-faced bastard Don Imus. Is he dead? Did he die? Is he somewhere roasted on a spit and hell?
Don Imus, yes.
Okay. When he called, you know, that with a basketball team, you know, nappy-headed hoe.
Yeah, Rutgers.
You know, so, because it's like, you know, I am not my hair. I am not this skin. You know, I am, you know, I am not who you perceive me to be just because of what, you know, just because you think that, you know, I am less than because I wear my hair in a natural state, because I refuse to, you know, put chemicals in my hair and straighten it, or, you know, press it, or what have you. Because of me swimming, I stopped dyeing my hair.
Yeah, chlorine's not good for that stuff.
Let it go. Chlorine is not good. I mean, my hair is delicate as is. You know, even with the lock, my hair is actually, I came up with some crazy concoction that actually has been working on growing, you know, getting some of my hair to grow back. But it's like, so it's like, no, chlorine ain't all that for, you know, with mixing with hair dye, not so much. But it's like, anyway, so speaking of being black and, you know, in America, so let's see. So I sent you, so we have the brother.
What a story. A guy in Detroit sues his employer for racial discrimination. And it doesn't go to trial. Somewhere along the way, the lawyers looked at the corporation and said, write the man a check. Because
just write the check.
Because you don't want the jury verdict. You don't want a group of jurors with pens in their hands saying, okay, here's the number one. Now let's start writing zeros and see how long it takes our hand to cramp.
Right.
Yeah. Corporation didn't want that, so they settled with the guy, and there's a non-disclosure agreement, and there's an express provision in the settlement document that says this payment is in no wise an admission of guilt or liability or culpability. And nobody's going to talk about how much we paid you. You're not going to talk about, we're not going to talk about it. This is just going to go away. Okay. So dude then takes his check to the bank.
His bank. That he's been banking at for 2 years.
Yes.
He didn't just open the account.
No. He had an account there. And let's make sure and give the name of the bank.
Yeah, make sure. Wachovia?
He went to negotiate the check at TCF Bank on Middle Belt Road in Livonia, Michigan, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he was going to deposit the check, and he was going to open a savings account and draw out some cash.
Like most people do.
And a 44-year-old guy. And the assistant branch manager goes, "Whoo, do Jesus, black man." And runs over and says, "Oh, sir, we're going to have to verify the check." And then he says, "Sir, our verification system's not working." And no, it wasn't dude, it was a woman. She said, "I'm going to need to call in the checks to verify them." And she picks up the phone, and instead of calling to verify the check, she calls the cops.
Calls the police.
And tells them that he's trying to deposit fraudulent checks. And has the gall to look at the man and say, "How did you get this money?" So the man gets utterly humiliated. Four cops show up.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the officers question him while two others stood outside.
Outside to make sure, you know, the Negro don't get, you know, don't run out.
Yeah, make sure he doesn't bolt. Right. And he said, "I'm a United States veteran. I have an honorable discharge from the Air Force. They discriminated against me because I'm black. None of this would have ever happened if I were white." All true.
True.
So now, but you know, it's got a happy ending.
That's another lawsuit.
Now he's got another lawsuit that he wasn't even, he's not running around looking to sue people. He'd just like to be treated like a human being. And so now the lawyers at TCF Bank are going to have to talk to the executives at TCF Bank, and they're going to have to say the same thing that the lawyers said to the folks at Enterprise Leasing. You know, I trust that's the car that, you know, we'll pick you up and discriminate against you. I don't know. But the lawyers for TCF Bank are going to have to say the same thing to them that the lawyer said to Enterprise Leasing, namely, you don't want to hand a jury verdict form to a group of people who then will write the number one and then start writing zeros until their hands cramp.
Until it's like, my hands hurt. And then you'll just say, well, girl, go get you some Bengay and rub that Bengay or some Tiger Balm on your hands and keep writing.
Exactly.
It's just,
and even after even and see, this is how egregious it was. Even after he gave the bank lady his lawyer's business card, she still, even after the lawyer said, "No, that's good." Even if, after the lawyer said that, she still wouldn't deal with it.
Mm-mm. Not good enough. Not good enough.
And the lawyer, whose name was Deborah Gordon, said the checks were 100% legitimate. I talked to the bank and the police myself during all of this, but the bank continued to take the position that they could not complete the transaction. I find it shocking that they called the police. The only thing my client was guilty of was banking while black.
That's it.
And then this quote, he kept his composure, though. He was afraid that with the police there, the situation could quickly escalate and he would end up in handcuffs or worse.
Dead. And then where did he go? Didn't he wind up going to where Chase? And opened up the bank? Opened up an account there?
I don't see that part, but... yeah, just another day in America. Oh, and meanwhile, the other thing, Tracy, the other thing that is worthy of our attention is that, and you know, we talked about this a little bit last night on the program, and I talked about how back when he was one of those consensus-seeking Democrats in the Reagan 80s, Joe Biden gleefully and gladly voted to fuck our generation out of our Social Security until we were 67 years old.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he did it. And other Democrats did it too.
Let's not forget about the credit cards and all that.
Well, yeah, but I'm focused on Social Security because Social Security, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Bernie being too hard on Grandpa Bernie being too hard on Grandpa Joe.
Grandpa Joe.
And all of that, but that's the reality. I mean, Joe Biden did that, but, and this is important, Nitwit Nero is out there bragging today, in the last 24 hours at Davos, because he's afraid to come home. He's got to, but he's afraid to. Because somebody might wise up and start saying, "Hey, y'all, like I said early in the program, y'all want to hear from Hunter Biden or Joe Biden so bad? They'll testify just as quick as Donald Trump does. Hey Donnie, stick your hand in the air and swear to tell the truth and get busy lying."
You can't. You know, I don't even know if he understands and knows how to tell the truth, Bob.
But
I think. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I know. No, but he was bragging today or in the last 24 hours. He gave a CNBC interview. You might recall the CNBC clip from yesterday where he confessed that they're withholding documents.
Yeah, we got all the documents. They don't got the documents. We got all the documents. And I just like, I was gobsmacked. I was like, what the motherfucker?
And so these multimillionaire members of the multimillionaire media like to talk about the ability of old people in America to, you know, have something resembling a little bit of dignity as we make, you know, as we make our way toward a grim and dusky death. And so the interviewer, Joe Kernan of CNBC, says, "Do I dare? One last question." Trump replies, "Go ahead." And you know, these members of the multimillionaire media like to call Social Security and Medicare entitlements.
Bitch, I paid them for that shit. I'm sorry, what?
Right. And so Kernan says, entitlements ever be on your plate? And Trump responds, at some point they will be. We have tremendous growth. We're going to have tremendous growth. This next year, it'll be toward the end of the year. The growth is going to be incredible. And at the right time, we'll take a look at that. You know, that's actually the easiest of all things if you look, because it's such a big percentage. And Kernan, then, to his credit, says, well, you said you wouldn't do that in the past. And Trump said, well, we're going to look. So, hey, Granny Maggot. Hey, Grandpa Maggot. Mm-hmm. It just came out of his mouth. He wants to cut Social Security and Medicare because freedom.
That part, bitches.
Is that going to make is that going to make America great some more? Is that going to MAGA? Is that going to CAG? What? What about it? Tell us, Granny and Grandpa Maggot, sitting there in your matching Barca loungers down at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club. Tell us.
In the double wide. Well, hey, isn't he, I mean, didn't I hear tell that he's also trying to fuck around with SSDI and all that, trying to make you every 6 months or so reapply or some other?
Oh, yeah. And misery for people trying to eat food and misery for people on disability. Yeah. You know, it's a full on shitstorm. Oh, and hey, happy news. Thank you to Cat in Ohio. Fundraising goal just went from 455 down to 430. So that's tremendous. Thank you, Kat. So we're $30 away from being being caught up all the way to the end of Tuesday's program. Thank you, Kat.
What's today? Today's Thursday?
Yeah, today's Thursday.
Oh, shit, I lost. Oh, that's right. Monday was a holiday for, you know, people who. Oh, speaking of Monday being MLK Day. So, yeah, got that, you know, hey, that's out in Colorado way. The chick that went with her, her antique shop selling the whites only replicas.
Yeah, replicas. That's the best part.
But, you know, because like I said, when I saw the, I send you when I see a headline and I glance over the story and I'm like, okay, this is my, you know, send you stuff, send Bob stuff story, just, you know, on the black side of things. And so I'm like, oh, this bitch is stupid. So, you know, and I just thought, you know, she was selling stuff that she had found in some old municipal building or whatnot and so forth. But so, Bob, you helped me out because I'm, you know.
No, these weren't things background. She found at flea markets and yard sales, the, you know, the mammy, mm-hmm. the mammy candy jars mammy and the lawn and, jockeys and the whites only signs. No, she, they're replicas.
This bitch.
And she and there's a thing now. You tell me if I'm wrong. There is a thing in the black community about collecting that hateful old shit.
Yes.
I mean, there is. But that's not who she was selling to.
That is not who she was selling to.
She was selling this hateful old racist paraphernalia to white folks.
To white folks. You know, and here's the deal, because I had at one point, I did have a mammy cookie jar, because to me, if I buy it, it's because I don't want anybody else to have the shit. You hear what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know, because it's like, really, because so you're not selling it. Again, you're not selling it to me. You're selling it to racist-ass white motherfuckers. Because you're selling it to somebody.
You know, it's a memento of the good old days.
For a bygone era. Huh?
Yeah, a memento of the good old days.
For the good old days. That maggot era. You know, the Make America Great Again era. Motherfuckers. So, this bitch was, you know, and when, especially when the woman who asked her about the replicas, because like I said, when I first saw that story, I thought, like, again, I thought she found this stuff, like you said, at a flea market, which is still even more troublesome if even if she had a flea, a yard sale, because I'm like, wait, you went to a yard sale and somebody thought it was appropriate to sell this at the yard sale? Then I'm scared about those people. But this hoe, this bitch, this see you next Tuesday. Yeah, I'm going there. Actually went to and found a person online, a company online, and ordered this shit. It's like, I want a sign that says whites only, or what else did the sign say? Municipal swimming pool, whites only, blacks can eat, you know, takeout only, black served, takeout only, and then all this, and the mammies, and all this. And then when confronted, she did the typical, well, I don't even know what, you know, when somebody tells her, you know, this is racist. And she's like, well, I grew up in a small town, and I don't even know the meaning of that word. What, bitch? What? What? You don't know the meaning of the word racist? And or she pulls that, well, I have black friends, and we just laugh about it. You know, your black friends, Colin Noir, or...
Colin Noir, yeah.
Or Ben Carson.
Or Stacy, what's her name? Stacy.
Stacy, what's her name? Stacy Dash.
Yeah.
Or Ben Sleepy Carson. I mean, are these your black friends? Because those are the only black people that I know.
You left out Herb Kane.
That's right. I was Herb Kane. Our homie Jesse Lee Pearson.
You know, it's been a while since we've had a Jesse Lee sighting.
Yeah,
he's due.
Yeah, you about due for Jesse, you know, or E.W. Jackson. You know, so unless those are your black friends that thought that shit was funny.
Yeah, I know.
Bitch, please. That shit ain't funny.
And I just got a note from Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. Oh, for fuck's sake. Now we've added banking while black to the U.S. criminal code. And then all caps. Is there anything black people can do without being fucking harassed by the police? Sorry for screaming, but this shit really pisses me off. 2020 Republican platform slogan, we're taking away your health care because fuck you and tax breaks for us.
That part, yay! But you know, like you just said, I still believe, because I got into this discussion on Tuesday, a black woman walked into a sushi bar. Seriously, no. I was waiting for my car in North Hollywood Tuesday, late afternoon, early evening, and it was going to take a while, so I walked out, and it was a sushi/ramen restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yummy.
Yeah. And it was empty except for a young black couple, and I sat down, and we looked at each other. I'm like, okay, what are the odds that there are three black people in an empty Japanese restaurant in North Hollywood? You know, I said, are we being set up? Is this a get out something? Or are they about to come in and steal our organs or something?
She didn't just go there, but she did.
I mean, the demographics just didn't fit that we would be, I mean, if there is not very often that
well,
I...
Well, but I mean,
anywhere.
Hold on. Wait. Was Kung Fu Fighting playing on the Muzak?
I was waiting for it.
You knew it was coming.
It's not very often that I go anywhere that there's... Where, especially at, you know, a Japanese restaurant, usually I'm the only one. You know, and so when I walk in and there's two other black people in a otherwise relatively empty restaurant other than the employees, I'm like, wait, what? It's a setup. I'm like, I said, y'all, should we bounce up out of here? Because I don't. It's something about that.
Yeah, I think this is one of those moments when video really does add to the overall quality of the program, because I'm just sitting here with my hand over my face.
Right. You're, You're laughing, so I get to go back and watch your reaction to what I'm saying. Oh God, that's going to be hilarious! I can't wait to do that. So it's just so I'm going, what the fuck? So
anyway, oh wait a minute, we've had a correction from Ron in Raleigh. Yeah, he says in our list of in your list of black friends there.
Oh, who else? Who did I leave out?
Ron says you forgot. What about Diamond and Silk? We had a Black Voices for Trump rally here on Wednesday. Diamond and Silk said that Trump is not racist.
I put Miles, fucking apology.
Yeah.
How the fuck did I leave out that?
Paste and polyester.
I forgot about Diamond and motherfucking Silk. Shit, man. How the hell did I do that? I forgot about Diamond and Silk. Those Uncle Thomas, Auntie Thomasina.
Please make a note of it. Oh, and by the way, Darlene in Connecticut says, I know it's small consolation, but I think Ayanna Pressley still looks gorgeous without hair, and that's not easy for women to pull off.
No.
Think of it's amazing I still remember the name. Think of Persis Kambata.
Wow, you went way back.
First Star Trek movie. I am V'ger. Remember her?
Yeah, Grace fucking Jones.
Yeah, Grace Jones. Yeah.
Because I'm a step away. I'm telling you, especially the more weight I lose, I think I would look hot as fuck bald headed, personally.
I don't see you getting rid of your locks.
Well, no. I mean, I'm looking to do what I, because, no, I just, see, here's the fucked up part about what's happening with my hair, is the fact that I'm, and like I said, it's somewhat growing back, but it's so thin at the top. My locks are amazing. You know, I got the Stevie Wonder hairline. Actually, my hairline is not. No, Stevie Wonder's hairline is ridiculous. His hairline starts at his neck.
Quit that. By the way, we've got another suggestion. Ron and Raleigh said, talk about fucking yourself. You heard that Comb-Over Caligula has admitted that after he gets reelected, he'll be cutting Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and other entitlements. So the maggots will run to the polls to fuck their grandparents, parents, and themselves out of benefits they're already paying for so that Trump can give his wealthy cronies, can get another tax cut. How can these people be so unabashedly stupid?
Stupid!
Yeah, but wait, because it's the P.S. that makes it art. P.S., put some Stasoff fro on it.
Stasoff! That's what it was! Stasoff.
Ron doesn't miss many.
Stasoff.
But you know, for the final performance last week, I was actually, Saturday night, I was thinking, you know what I might do? I might shave my head. No, I might shave my head. No, I was thinking for the Sunday matinee performance, I'd just blow everybody's mind, come in with my head shaved. And then, of course, I thought better of it. Because I realized that my head would be so pink.
Ooh, and it's, no, baby, no.
And then I'd have, then because I managed to get through without doing it. I did that with no makeup whatsoever, because the theater is so immediate. And it just really wasn't that necessary. But then I realized that if I did shave my head, I would have had to do makeup just to keep from blinding the traditionally geriatric Sunday afternoon audience.
You know, I'm not laughing at you.
Is there a hole in the wall? Is the moon out? I thought this was the afternoon matinee.
I thought it was in the afternoon. It's just, you know, I have been kind of in a funk the last few days. It's just, things are just, I hate being bipolar. And I hate when I get into my, you know, even with my medication and, you know, the playing around with the dosages and stuff. I hate when I get into the depressed, the lows. I mean, granted, the lows aren't as low as they used to be, granted, but they're they're still there. And I just, you know, and a lot of times it is situational. And I have to say that, you know, the last few, you know, listening to, you know, I'm proud of what the Democrats are trying to achieve with this trial. But then, you know, and I'm just glad that, like you said the other day, about that this is just going to be a historical record of all of this. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I'm just terrified about the end, you know, the end all be all of what's going to happen in November. And I try not to, you know, I try to be more Scott-like, you know, and look and pray that things are going to be, you know, that people are going to get the question, you know, the question, the answer right in November. But like you said, you know, these motherfuckers are still going to vote for Trump, no matter what he says, no matter what he does. They're going to still vote for Trump. And, you know, even though, you know, it is, even though Hillary won the election in 2016.
She did. Yeah, she did. She's on, the only reason the only reason she's not president is the operation of a racist anachronism buried in the Constitution. Period.
Right. Period. It wasn't even by the skin of her teeth. Sister Gal Brad won by 3 fucking million votes. 3 motherfucking million people said, fuck this bitch, fuck him, fuck Trump, fuck this motherfucker. We do not want this asshole as our president. And that's considering all the assholes that stay their punk asses at home. And yes, I'm calling you out, punk ass bitches who stayed at home and said, I don't need to be bothered.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Indeed. Well, I think they're getting ready to start the shindig back up.
So yeah, I gotta get going anyway because I'm about to go home and get my ass, try to get my funk, get out this funk and go for a run or something. But anyway, it's good hearing from you.
Oh, it's good hearing from you. I'm glad you called in because
I need that boost.
God knows I can always use a giggle. And you never fail to deliver.
I never. Well, like I said the other day, you know, when you were on your, you know, doing your play and you were gone last week, I said I needed a fix. I was scratching like a crack hoe. So
yes.
That's it. I said it, and I'm not that I was ever a crack hoe, but I've seen plenty of crack hoes, so I know how they scratch. I know what it looks like. So anywho, you know, I'm an expert. Anyway, love your face. I love my fat horn family. And y'all take care. You hear?
Indeed, indeed. Thank you, Tracy. You have a good evening, dear.
You too, baby. Bye.
The one and only Tracy, lady cab driver from Southern California. And what did I say? Yeah, we're at 4:30. So if we could knock down another $30, we'd at least be have Monday and Tuesday taken care of, and do the best we can heading into Friday on the front porch, because we're in the third hour of the program. If you've got a burr under your saddle or a bee under your bonnet, jump into the conversation. You are more than welcome to do so. You might get a kick out of it because, you know, the maggots in the Senate are saying maggoty Senate things. But you got to go out into the wilds of the white wing internet to really, really get to the truly screwy, loopy, ultra maggoty maggotness. And so I think this is going to be our first time hearing from Amanda Grace. She calls herself a prophetess. And no, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but I think we can still do this. Amanda Grace has a solution to the whole impeachment problem. Get the hockey puck. Just takes a minute.
Jay Sekulow, says the Lord. I have prepared him, and I have walked with him and talked with him. I have raised him up for such a time as this. The brilliance that will come forth from that man, the courage and the conviction, a beacon of light on a hill, speaking the wisdom that only comes from Almighty God. In the midst of the den of lions, says the Lord.
I'm trying to figure out what's squeaking in the background. I don't know if that's a chair or if she's torturing a squirrel or I don't know.
The den of lions will not dare touch him, for I have marked him and positioned him for such a time as this, and I will give him vision, and I will expose to him what is being plotted behind closed doors. Revelation will come forth, and he will emerge an incredible witness and mouthpiece for my glory. For I, the Lord, have already ruled in the courts. The gavel has dropped.
We ask in the name of Jesus Christ, Father God, your army, your angelic army, your warring angels with flaming swords be dispatched, Father God, to shred, destroy, and put down every plot, scheme, contract, assignment, hex, vex, spell, and attempt of the enemy.
Well, apparently she missed. Or the angels with the flaming swords missed. Because they instead took out, I don't know these people, how their minds work, took out three noble and decent firefighters in Australia. Robert in Australia wrote a little bit ago and said, the tanker crash is all over the news here. It's very upsetting that people who came to help died yesterday, smoke in the air. You can see it. Today, it's raining softly, and you can still see the smoke in the air. What you may not have heard is that three major charities here in Australia have been called out over not distributing money donated to the bushfire appeal. Apparently, they've been holding on to approximately two-thirds of the money donated. This is the responsibility of the people running the charities, the CEOs, the board, the bastards whose main concern is money, the people who don't work on the front line. The people on the front line have been doing incredible work. And everything I've seen indicates that to be true. Scott in San Diego says, here's the deal regarding Trump, the GOP, Social Security, and entitlement. They either have their thumb on the scale or their thumb in their ass. Anything to keep from doing the positive or appropriate thing for folks. Well, unless you can do something for Republicans, maggots, feel no sense whatsoever of any desire to do anything for you. And remember, much as was the case with the Affordable Care Act, I'm pretty sure that back in the 1930s, the legislation that created Social Security passed without a single Republican vote. And where Social Security is concerned, it is always important to remember that when Social Security passed and when FDR signed it into law, Republicans back then made a vow to kill it. And when they weren't able to kill it, they told the next generation, you kill it. Social Security must be killed. And when that generation failed, they told the next generation, you kill it. Social Security must go. And so we're probably four generations in now, and they're getting so close they can taste it. Do you remember 2005? Because I do. And I remember how in 2005, having been returned to office, George W. Bush said, I got me some political capital now, and I'm going to spend it, and we're going to prioritize Social Security. And he was narrowly stopped. Oh, so narrowly stopped. But this isn't one of those things that Donald J. Trump came up with by himself. The demise of Social Security has been the fondest dream of the Republican Party since the moment the ink dried on FDR's signature on the legislation. The prophetess.
Against the president, against those with him, against those praying for him,
yes.
And against your people, Father God.
Yes.
Father, in the name of Jesus Christ, as you sent the captain of the army of the Lord of hosts to lead Joshua into Jericho, we ask that you send, Father God, the captain of the army of the Lord of hosts to lead that team right now, that legal team of the presidents, to lead them to victory and to expose and shine your divine light on what is hidden, Father.
Yeah. I imagine there's medication to help that, but how are you ever going to get it to them? Mm-hmm. There is, these are the people. These are the people that would gladly return him to power. Representative Jeffries is back at the podium. Let's check back in.
The second official act that President Trump used to corruptly abuse his power was the withholding of an Oval Office meeting with the president of Ukraine. Before we took the break, we started walking through the overwhelming evidence about how President Trump withheld this official White House meeting that was vitally important to Ukraine as part of a corrupt scheme to convince President Zelensky to announce two phony political investigations. These investigations were entirely unrelated to any official U.S. policy and solely benefited President Trump. We talked about why withholding the meeting was so significant to our ally, Ukraine. Ukraine is a fragile democracy under relentless attack from Russian-backed separatists in the East. U.S. support is vitally important to Ukraine in that war. They desperately need our support. They desperately need our assistance. Because of this vast power disparity, President Trump had immense power over Ukraine, and President Trump knew it. So when President Trump asked for a favor on a July 25th call, he knew that President Zelensky would feel incredible pressure to do exactly what President Trump wanted. President Trump used his agents, both his administration appointees and his personal attorney, Rudolph Giuliani, to make clear to Ukraine, even in early July, that much needed White House meeting that they requested would only occur if they announced these phony political investigations. Now, to be clear, as Ambassador Sondland testified, everyone was in the loop. That includes Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and Secretary of Energy Rick Perry. Even ahead of the July 25th call, Ambassador Sondland was in close, repeated contact with these officials. His mission? Schedule a telephone conversation during which the new Ukrainian leader would personally commit to do the phony investigations sought by President Trump in order to unlock a meeting in the Oval Office. This for that, a quid pro quo. Now, this isn't just based on the testimony of witnesses. It is corroborated by texts and emails as well. Let's look at some of that evidence now. On July 13th, for example, Ambassador Sondland emailed National Security Council official Timothy Morrison and made the case for President Trump to call the Ukrainian leader prior to the parliamentary elections scheduled for July 21st. In that email, as the highlighted text shows, Ambassador Sondland said, "The sole purpose of the call was to assure President Trump that investigations will be allowed to move forward." In other words, to get the Oval Office meeting, President Zelensky had to move forward on the phony political investigations, part of the scheme to cheat in the 2020 presidential campaign. This for that. On July 19th, Ambassador Sondland spoke directly with President Zelensky. He spoke directly with President Zelensky to prepare him for a call with President Trump. Ambassador Sondland coached President Zelensky to use key phrases and reassure President Trump of Ukraine's intention to bend to President Trump's will with respect to the phony investigations that President Trump sought. Ambassador Sondland, in response, Volker texted. In response, Volker texted, "Most important is for Zelensky to say that he will help with the investigations." That same day, Ambassador Sondland emailed top administration officials, including Acting Chief of Staff Mulvaney, Secretary Pompeo, and Secretary Perry, to summarize his conversation with Zelensky. In that email, Ambassador Sondland said Zelensky is, quote, "prepared to receive POTUS's call. Will assure him," meaning POTUS, "that he intends to run a fully transparent investigation and will turn over every stone." Both Acting Chief of Staff Mulvaney and Secretary Perry responded to the email, noting that the head of state call would be scheduled. Secretary Perry wrote, "Mick just confirmed the call being set up for tomorrow by NSC, the National Security Council." And Mulvaney responded, "I asked NSC to set it up for tomorrow." Neither Mulvaney nor Secretary Perry took issue with the fact that Sondland coached Zelensky to yield to President Trump's pressure campaign. But instead, they took steps to connect the two leaders. Everyone was in the loop. They were aware that during the July 20th call, President Trump intended to solicit foreign interference in the 2020 election and pressed the Ukrainian leader to announce investigations into former Vice President Biden and the CrowdStrike conspiracy theory. There was no focus on advancing America's foreign policy or national security objectives. The only priority was President Trump's corrupt demand for phony investigations in exchange for an Oval Office meeting. This for that. Here's Ambassador Sondland's testimony confirming this scheme.
Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret. Everyone was informed via email on July 19th, days before the presidential call. As I communicated to the team, I told President Zelensky in advance that assurances to run a fully transparent investigation and turn over every stone were necessary in his call with President Trump.
In his call with President Trump. Now we come to July 25th, the morning of the infamous phone call, the culmination of a months-long campaign to engineer a corrupt quid pro quo.
I love the cadence that he brings to this, and there's something important at work here. I don't know how many times today I have seen that clip of Gordon Sondland saying everybody was in the loop. But in any serious presentation, the rules of primacy and recency obtain. Things that people hear first, they tend to retain, and things that they have heard most recently, they tend to retain. And then things that are repeated to them time and again, they tend to retain. And so even though the Republicans don't like sitting there, even though the Republicans despise the Constitution of the United States and are actively involved in a coup to destroy it, by the time this thing is over, everyone was in the loop will be seared into their bowling ball smooth brains. They can't evade it. I almost wonder, given the behavior of people like Josh Hawley of Missouri, if he's sitting there with earplugs in and just takes them out when nobody's looking. I don't know. But this is a masterclass in prosecution. It really, really is. They talk about Zelensky promising to leave no stone unturned. They are leaving no stone unturned. And this is eating at the disgusting guts of that sickening coward who occupies the White House. By the way, I have to pass out a cowbell belatedly. To Tracy, Lady B just wrote and said, subject line, his hairline starts at the neck. Lady B says, dead. I'm dead, Tracy. You just slayed me. Lady B also noting, waves hand wildly. I too used to rock the Jerry Curl, sleeping in a plastic bag that also doubled as a shower cap. Pillowcases were runt, runt. Easy, breezy, beautiful, let your soul glow. did they advertise on Soul Train? Or was that just Afro Sheen? Can't recall. My poor father didn't understand why I watched Soul Train. Of course, he didn't understand any music produced past, say, Johnny Mathis singing The Twelfth of Never. So, yeah, oh well. Ron and Raleigh noting, Social Security shortfall. Because of the upward distribution of wealth, Social Security garners 6% less funding than before. Now the orange jagoff wants to send more cash upward. Of course he does. He's a thief. Joe Connison, years and years and years ago, wrote a news article for the Village Voice, in which he detailed how the Trump Organization threw a 70-year-old woman who was recovering from a stroke out of a Trump property, an apartment, in Flushing. They claimed that she owed them $12. She did not owe them a penny, had never been late on her rent, but they wanted her out of the apartment so that they could rent it for twice as much money. They did that. They did that. And so to fuck America's elderly and most vulnerable, that wouldn't be a reach at all for this monstrosity, this misbegotten thing, the best part of whom ran down his mother's leg. Subject line, the prophetess. Scott in San Diego says, while she's calling down stuff, somebody needs to hold back some of that oil being cast upon the waters and grease that woman. joint by joint. Dave in South Carolina, Stan, says, if you simply collect Social Security taxes on all income with no income ceiling, then there's no need to cut benefits. In fact, benefits could be increased. Collect these taxes on all those multi-million-dollar yearly bonuses, too. It is not an insurmountable problem. But Republicans don't want to do that because, A, it would impact them, and, B, they want Social Security to die. I mean, we need to understand that at a fundamental level. Oh, and while this thing, while this sham is perpetrated by the Republican Party led by Mitch McConnell in the Senate, the maladministration being run by venereal Vespasian continues to do its dirty business. There was a new rule entered into the Federal Register today. And in it, jurisdiction is taken away from the United States State Department and given to the Department of Commerce in regard to a wide variety of firearms exports from this country. The rule change is expected to boost sales of ammunition and guns, and those guns include sniper rifles, AR-15s, and other semi-automatic firearms. Yeah. Disgusting. The Giffords Law Center, named for Gabby Giffords, said the new rule will eliminate congressional oversight, undermine strong gun laws in other countries, and make it easier for guns to fall into the wrong hands overseas. Jesus. Adzi Vokiwa is the federal affairs manager for the Giffords Law Center. Once again, the Trump administration chose gun industry profits over public safety. Since this ill-conceived proposal was first announced nearly 2 years ago, human rights, arms control, and gun safety organizations repeatedly made it clear that oversight of firearms exports should remain with the State Department, which has the expertise to ensure that weapons do not fall into the wrong hands. The sale of firearms domestically and abroad deserves the highest level of scrutiny, and this regulation fails to offer much scrutiny at all. Jesus. More than 100 organizations sounded off denouncing the rule. Didn't matter. And so that's another, you know, just another way of making life on Earth a little bit more hellish. Brought to you by, you know, the Trump gang. Damn. Damn. Other news? And this is kind of good news. Maybe we can take some solace in it. Somebody is finally going to jail for the opioid crisis. Yep. A former billionaire and pharmaceutical executive named John Kapoor has been handed 5 years and 6 months in prison. Because of a scheme by which his company, Insys Therapeutics, which was a manufacturer of an opioid painkiller called Subsys, Well, they cooked up a scam whereby they bribed doctors to irresponsibly prescribe the medication. U.S. District Judge Allison Burroughs up in Boston said that she gave him the 5 years because of his central role in the crime. They were found guilty last year. It's taken this long to get them sentenced. He and four other executives. They actually bribed doctors to give this terrifyingly addictive medication to people who did not need it or even want it. Meanwhile, people with real pain problems in states like West Virginia literally suffer in agony for the want of it because, you know, well, hillbillies get hooked real easy. Part of being a hillbilly, I reckon. It's in the hillbilly DNA. He's 76 years old, and instead of giving him the 15 years that prosecutors wanted, he got five. The defense wanted one. What is subsys? Subsys is an oral fentanyl spray. You know, I don't know, maybe they'll start calling it hillbilly banaka. I guess what really got them busted was the fact that they lied to insurance companies to make sure that the stuff was covered. Because a prescription for this shit ran as much as $19,000 a month. Another NSYS executive, the sales chief, Alec Berlikoff, he got 26 months in the stir. The sales executive, Berlikoff, hired a stripper as a subsys sales rep to help persuade doctors to prescribe the medication and to boost the prescribing of the medication. When Berlikoff spoke to the judge today, he said, "I didn't think of who we were at NSYS and how unethical what we were doing was. The only thing I could think of was how I could keep up with the fast and furious pace necessary to get ahead." Jesus. How many did they kill? But John Kapoor did get a little bit of a break because of his advanced age. And because of his, wait for it, I'm not kidding, philanthropy. Yeah. Philanthropy. God almighty. And then, and I don't know what's wrong down here. Well, I got an idea. There's practically a church on every corner down here in the Bible Belt. But they seem to not quite be getting the job done. I saw a story earlier today preparing for the evening's program. And I thought I was looking at something from a few months back. Or that maybe they had just gotten around to formally charging the kid. You remember a few months ago I had the story of the boy who murdered his stepmom and his siblings and his father. And a little community here in Alabama was shaken to its core. Well, that's what I thought I was reading. When I saw a headline today, Alabama boy, 16, charged with stabbing deaths of mom and his twin brothers. Yeah, two brothers. Got a picture here of the mom and the two twins. Landon, 16-year-old Landon Hudson Durham of Munford, Alabama, will be tried as an adult, and he was charged with capital murder for killing Holly Christina Durham and the twin boys Branson William and Baron Joseph Durham, each 13 years old. No, it was an entirely separate story, an entirely separate case. 16-year-old boy knifed his mother and twin brothers to death in Talladega County, Alabama. Not being particularly helpful, the district attorney for Talladega County is one Stephen Giddens. He said, "This is the kind of crime you see on TV or the media or the internet that happen in other places, and for it to happen here, it really hits home." Yeah, because it didn't hit home for District Attorney Giddens when it happened somewhere else. Meanwhile, at the NRA, I'm sure those freaks are saying, well, at least he didn't use a gun. Yeah. And when they say other places, of course, when a district attorney in Talladega County, Alabama, says other places, you know what he means. "That ain't supposed to happen here in Alabama. We ain't them kind of people." Yeah. At least there's a fighting chance that the young man won't get the death penalty. He's white. So there's very little time left in the program, but it would be lovely if we could knock out that last $30 and just be going into tomorrow with a $600 fundraising goal. Is that a possibility? I guess it's possible. Let's check back in with the proceedings, shall we?
Is Zelensky's top guy. He later wrote the statement would come out after we receive a confirmation of a date for the White House visit. Ambassador Volker counterproposed. They would iron out the statement in private, use that to get the date for the meeting in the Oval Office, and then President Zelensky would make the public statement. This for that. Mr. Yermark countered, "Once we have a date, we will call for a press briefing announcing upcoming visit and outlining vision for the reboot of the U.S.-Ukraine relationship, including, among other things, Burisma and election meddling and investigations." That was a specific reference to President Trump's corrupt demands. 2 days later, Mr. Yermark sent the draft statement, but the statement did not reference Burisma or the 2016 election. As soon as Mr. Yermark sent the statement, what did Ambassadors Sondland and Volker do? They sought a call with Rudolph Giuliani to see if the statement would suffice. They needed to check in with Mr. Giuliani, who was leading the charge to lock down the corrupt quid pro quo. Let's listen to Ambassador Volker.
"This is the first draft of that from Mr. Yermak after the conversations that we had.
And it does not mention Burisma or the 2016 election interference, correct?"
"It does not."
And you testified in your deposition that you and Ambassador Sondland and Mayor Giuliani had a conversation about this draft after you received it. Is that right?"
"That is correct."
"And Mr. Giuliani said that if the statement did not include Burisma and 2016 election, it would not have any credibility. Is that right?
That's correct.
Mr. Giuliani, acting on behalf of President Trump, made clear that the statement from the Ukrainians had to target Vice President Biden for the reasons outlined earlier today. And it had to mention the conspiracy theory about Ukraine interfering in the 2016 election. After Mr. Giuliani conveyed this on the telephone call, Ambassadors Volker and Sondland texted Mr. Yermak and requested a call to convey that message. Ambassador Volker says, "Hey, Andre, we spoke with Rudy. When is good to call you?" And Ambassador Sondland makes clear the urgency, texting, "Important. Do you have 5 minutes?" Now, Ambassador Volker made clear to Mr. Yermak that the statement needed the two key items Mr. Giuliani required for the president. Here's Ambassador Volker's testimony to that effect.
"Hi, Andre. Good talking. Following is text with insert at the end for the two key items. We will work on official request."
And then you'll see the highlighted portion of the next text. The other is identical to your previous one, and then it just adds, including these involving Burisma and the 2016 elections. Is that right?
That is correct.
And that was what Mr. Giuliani insisted on adding to the statement?
That's what he said would be necessary for that to be credible.
And the Ukrainians ultimately did not issue this statement, is that right?
That is correct.
And President Zelensky ultimately did not get the Oval Office meeting either, did he?
Not yet.
President Zelensky is still waiting for that Oval Office meeting. Ronald Reagan, in a speech that he delivered in 1980,
God, it guts the maggots when they get slapped in the face with the name of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. It just guts them.
Said to the world, "East and West do not mistrust each other because we are armed. We are armed because we mistrust each other. And our differences are not about weapons, but about liberty." The Trump-Ukraine scandal is certainly about weapons. It's about the unlawful withholding of $391 million in security aid. It's about a withheld, sought-after Oval Office meeting. It's about trying to cheat in the 2020 election. It's about corrupting our democracy. It's about undermining America's national security. It's about a stunning abuse of power. It's about obstruction of Congress. It's about the need for us here in this great chamber to have a fair trial with witnesses and evidence. It's about a corrupt quid pro quo. But perhaps above all else, it's about liberty. Because in America, for all of us, what keeps us free from tyranny is the sacred principle that in this great country, no one is above the law.
Well, Moscow Mitch, don't you want a pee-pee break? This is Representative
Mr.
Garcia.
Mr. Chief Justice, Senators, President's Counsel, we reviewed the mountain of evidence that
Betty
proves
Foggers.
The President's officials act in his scheme. The corrupt bargain of a White House meeting in exchange for Ukraine announcing sham political investigations. You heard from each relevant witness with first-hand knowledge of the president's corrupt scheme, Sondland, Taylor, Volcker, Hill, and Vindman, that there was a corrupt deal, an Oval Office meeting for investigations, quid pro quo, this for that. You also saw inescapable documentary proof that clearly proves a corrupt quid pro quo. The evidence is consistent, corroborated. It comes from many, in many forms, from many individuals who are lifelong public servants with no motivation to lie. In short, the evidence is overwhelming. Given how much we have gone through, let's review some of those career public servants' testimony who state clearly that they too believed it was a quid pro quo, a this for that. Because it is really powerful to hear directly from them. So let's watch Ambassador Taylor.
By mid-July, it was becoming clear to me that the meeting President Zelensky wanted was conditioned on the investigations of Burisma and alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 U.S. elections. It was also clear that this condition was driven by the irregular policy channel I had come to understand was guided by Mr. Giuliani.
It was clear this were conditions driven by irregular policies. And we know this, too, because Ambassador Sondland said so at the July 10 meeting. Dr. Fiona Hill described the scene in Ambassador Bolton's office where the quid pro quo was made clear. Let's watch.
The Ukrainians, Mr. Daniluk, starts to ask about a White House meeting. And Ambassador Bolton was trying to parry this back. Although he's the National Security Advisor, he's not in charge of scheduling the meeting. We have input recommending the meetings, and this goes through a whole process. So it's not Ambassador Bolton's role to start pulling out the schedule and start saying, right, well, we're going to look and see if this Tuesday in this month is going to work with this. And he does not, as a matter of course, like to discuss the details of these meetings. He likes to leave them to, you know, the appropriate staff for this. So this was already going to be an uncomfortable issue. And as Ambassador Bolton...
All right, I have to interrupt for a minute for a cowbell. this just in from James in Illinois. Moscow Mitch? You mean three-corner Mitch? He's wearing a diaper. He's good. Yep. You earned that one, James. James. And Lee in New York, citing Reagan. Quoting Reagan does not move these Republicans. Reagan was like Moses. Trump is like Jesus. You do not see Christians shouting Moses. They shout Jesus. Reagan is so last testament. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well played, both of you. Mike in Cascadia says, what's the rebut time? The GOP line that Obama only provided MREs and blankets, whereas lately they've been allocated javelins. Well, that they've been hollering that every time they can get to a microphone. Well, I mean, they got the aid, and that Kenyan Muslim new slurper just wanted to send them blankies. But the problem was, the Congress had not appropriated the military aid. Because Congress has a role in all of this. They do control the purse strings. And thank you. Thank you, Mike in Cascadia. So we'll take it down to 4:15 now. Thank you, Mike. That is most helpful. Maybe we will get it down to just a nice round $600 number by the time Friday on the Front Porch rolls around. It'd be wonderful. So, say what you will about whether this is a futile process or not. There's no getting around the fact, though, that the House managers are doing a simply superb job. Any prosecutor would be proud to be on a team like this. And they, as they move through their lives, can say, I honored my oath to the Constitution. There's only one thing I would like to hear them do, and I guess we're a little late in the process for it. I would like to hear them, every time they address the senators sitting as jurors, in ancient Rome, they had a term for members of the Roman Senate. And they would, and someone addressing the Senate would use the term, to remind the senators of why they were there and the awesome and immense power that they held. And the term used in the ancient Roman Senate, it was all white and all male during the days of the Republic. They would refer to them as conscript fathers. Conscript fathers. And I think something equally magisterial or majestic is called for in this instance. Instead of conscript fathers, because it does not apply, how about addressing them consistently as oath-sworn members of the Senate of the United States? Hit them over the head with that oath over and over again. Don't let them hide from it. Constantly remind the people watching, if not the senators themselves, that there are sacred oaths involved in all of this, and that these white, almost entirely white, 52 white out of 53 members, overwhelmingly male Republican senators, do have a solemn oath on the line. And that even if they don't care about it, we, by God, do. Back for a couple of minutes to Representative Garcia.
In the loop. Meaning it became clear that President Trump was directing this. And Dr. Hill, who at one point confronted Gordon Sondland over this arrangement, further reached the conclusion that he was acting on the president's orders and coordinating with other senior officials. He had made this clear. He was briefing the president on all this. Here's Dr. Hill's testimony. Let's watch.
So I was upset with him that he wasn't fully telling us about all of the meetings that he was having. And he said to me, but I'm briefing the president. I'm briefing Chief of Staff Mulvaney. I'm briefing Secretary Pompeo, and I've talked to Ambassador Bolton. Who else do I have to deal with? And the point is, we have a robust interagency process that deals with Ukraine. It includes Mr. Holmes. It includes Ambassador Taylor as the chargé in Ukraine. It includes a whole load of other people. But it struck me when yesterday, when you put up on the screen Ambassador Sondland's emails and who was on these emails, and he said, these are the people who need to know, that he was absolutely right. Because he was being involved in a domestic political errand. And we were being involved in national security foreign policy. And those two things had just diverged.
So the evidence is very clear. The White House meeting would only be scheduled if Ukraine announced the investigations that everyone, including the Ukrainians, understood to be purely political efforts to benefit the president. The only way to come to a different conclusion is to ignore the evidence. One additional way you could tell that this conduct is truly corrupt and not U.S. foreign policy as usual is that these officials, these lifetime career public servants, didn't just testify about this in impeachment proceedings. They contemporaneously reported this conduct in real time. Their reactions illustrate that this was not the kind of thing that both parties do when they have the White House. This was something different, something corrupt, something insidious, to use Ambassador Sondland's characterization in later testimony. The officials who instinctively recoiled from the corrupt deal that Sondland blurted out were distinguished, patriotic public servants. Let's go through some specific examples of that evidence. After the July 10 meeting we just talked about, where Ambassador Sondland made clear the agreement that the White House meetings were conditioned on the investigations, Dr. Hill consulted with Ambassador Bolton and told him what she had heard. Ambassador Bolton gave her, as she put it, very specific instruction to report this conduct.
It is time to close out the proceedings for the evening. And on the way out the door, an observation by Brother Deacon Asa, reminding them that they have an oath to keep. Except there's one problem. Keeping their oath will keep them from keeping their oaf, O-A-F, which is more important to them. Yep, that gets one too. So that's our Thorn in the Side Thursday. A reminder, Friday on the front porch tomorrow, same time. And then Saturday, into the car and home. Yeah. So, also a note from Darlene in Connecticut. You know, all that the Senate repigs can do is engage in ad hominem attacks against the impeachment managers and try to diminish the more non-substantive but essential format and processes the managers are employing in presenting their case. Like, the repigs' common complaint is that there's nothing new in what the managers are arguing, and they're repeating the same things over and over. Seriously? That's hilarious. When you're doing a prosecution, repetition is critical. I don't like it, but even with my grant writing, there is redundancy. The questions funders ask are designed to encourage repetition. Why? Because people miss shit all the time, whether through lack of concentration, getting diverted or distracted, stupidity, or just not getting it until it's explained to them in 1,000 different ways until they freaking do. Representative Garcia's presentation today was excellent. She had the best graphics, too. She really illustrated Trump's corrupt intent. Kudos, Judge Garcia. Indeed. And it's all profound. And the other reason you have to do the engage in the repetition is because you're hoping at some point in time you get the message through to the Marsha goodness Blackburns of the world, who can't be bothered to sit there and honor her oath to sit and listen. Also from Darlene, ABC News, Chief Justice's admonishment followed a note from Susan Collins. Darlene observing, seriously? But of course. And it also emerged this evening that Susan Collins is complaining about the free press's presence in the Senate chambers. No kidding. She complained and was heard by reporters in the gallery one floor above her that she didn't like having reporters on the front row of the seats reserved for the press. She wanted that front row emptied because she's Susan Collins. Disgusting woman. Subject line, our team, James in Illinois, says, I'm proud of all of them. I was particularly concerned about Chairman Nadler being up to the rigor of the task, but after hearing the B team lie about everything, he called them out. Yay, Jerry. Oh, they really hate him. But here's the fun part. There's, and I know I'm over time now, but I owe time. I got 5 days to catch up with. There's a rule for lawyers that says a lawyer will not become a witness in his own cause. Guess what? According to Lev Parnas, lawyer Cipollone and lawyer Seculo are already witnesses in their own cause because they were in the loop. They were in the loop in the conversations with Rudy Giuliani about what he was up to in Ukraine. They were already in the loop. And so they are witnesses. Part of the reason that they're so terrified of calling witnesses is that those two fuckers could wind up in deep ethical doo-doo if witnesses are indeed called, because they are both corroborating witnesses. One of the things that Lev Parnas pointed out was that I think it was with regard to Seculo, that he was in the loop. He knew what Rudy was up to, and he disagreed with it. There may yet be considerably more drama. But on the way out the door, thank you. With the note, yo, the exchange rate is nasty. Robert in Australia has taken us down, let's see, to 355. No, 365. 365. So we are caught up with Monday and Tuesday and part of Wednesday now. Thank you, Robert. Stay out of the smoke. And Lady B has taken us down to 360. Thank you so much, Lady B. And thank all of you. So tomorrow, it's a little less terrifying for Friday on the front porch. And remember, I think we're gonna have a fascinating conversation if Steve from New York can make it to the the group. But well, we'll see what the day brings, won't we? Thank you all. Whether you are a subscriber or an a la carte contributor, thank you all for keeping this program on the air, making all of this possible. Thank you, each and every one of you, for sharing the precious finite time of your life, engaging in this program, however you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks for getting White Rose back up and running again, Ben. Much obliged. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.